Okay. So now that we're in the 3 weeks where we mourn, we have many customs of mourning for the Beit HaMikdash, I thought I'd talk a little bit about one aspect of that mourning and focus on a Agadic passage in that context. And note some of the issues that arise in light of our discussions throughout the year. For those of you who attended our Agadah Tosh year, we've talked about this many times, that Agadah Tosh, often it's not clear to the extent to which they're meant only philosophically, halachically. And there's one passage in particular which I think is striking in the methodological questions it raises, and also gets us thinking a bit about the Chorban. So, in general, there are many ways in which we commemorate the Chorban. Some of them are happier than others, right? Some of them are recreations of Mikdash activities, whether it be taking the lulav, the Arbaminim, rather, outside the Mikdash all 7 days, which when the Mikdash stood was only a practice within the confines of the Mikdash and Yerushalayim, and not Begvulin. But obviously, many of them are mourning practices. Perhaps the most famous being the halacha that one must leave a square amma of unplastered area on his wall opposite the door. And that appears in an extensive Gemara in the last amud of the third parak of Baba Basra and Cheskas Abatam and Daf Samach about different practices we have that commemorate the Mikdash. And now in that context, the Gemara also, after it talks about the halacha that we actually have, right, whether it be that square amma, or it be putting the ashes on the head of Chatanim, launches into a discussion which, the simplest read, I would say, is somewhat hyperbolic, is meant to describe the intensity of the suffering in the aftermath of the Chorban. So it discusses, again, simple pshat, hyperbolically, how bad it was and what people wanted to do as mourning. Right? There's what we actually do to mourn, which is what is listed earlier in the Gemara, and then there are the things that never actually came to fruition. So, for example, Amar Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha miyom shachar veid hamikdash dinu shenigzor alatz meinu shelelechol basar v'lishtot yayin. We should have, once the Mikdash was destroyed, ceased eating meat, drinking wine. Ella in gozen gzeira al hatzibur elam kin rov tzibur yecholen alamod ba. But we couldn't do that because people can't handle it. Now, again, that's somewhere between Agadah and Halacha, right? It's not clear, right? One way of reading that would be purely Agadically, right? It's just hyperbole. The other would be to say, look, it's sort of like theoretical Halacha, right? I would have wanted to do this, but we can't. But I'm telling you, right? Why am I telling you this, right? If it's impossible. I'm telling you this not because I don't want you to eat meat or drink wine, right? That would be because it's not halacha, but rather to tell you, you know, how bad it was and what, like, is a theoretical halacha that could have emerged to really tell you how bad things are. So it's, you know, it's either like a theoretical halachic construct that makes us understand how bad things were, or it's just mere hyperbole to drive home the intensity. Now, as surprising as that line is, the Gemara then continues and says that miyom shepashta malchut harisha shegozer aleinu gzerot raot v'kashot mevatal menu Torah u'mitzvot. Now that this horrible evil empire has emerged, which prevents us performing mitzvot, v'nein manachar otan ikonas neshvu haben, right, doesn't allow us to do, of amri la liyashu haben, right, doesn't allow us to perform basic mitzvot, dinu shenigzor al atzmeinu shlo yisa isha uloholid banim v'nimtza zaro shel Avram avinu kala me'elav el hanach lan liyisrael mutav shiyushogin v'ayu mizidin. We should have decreed not to have children at all, and the children of Israel would have been destroyed of the, right, sort of Memela, right, it just would have happened, because we wouldn't have children, someone would be born. But Hanach Lahem Yisrael, leave the Jews, because it's better that they are accidental sinners than intentional violators of the law. Now, that phrase in general in Shas is a strict halachic one. The parameters of it are a bit complicated, and subject to a huge machloket haposkim, rishonim and achronim. But basically it means that in a case when someone is doing something wrong, but doesn't know it, under certain circumstances it's better to let them continue violating it as an accidental sinner, rather than telling them that what they're doing is wrong, knowing they won't listen, and therefore becoming intentional violators of the law. Now, how do we understand this line? So as the guys who came to Agadah to Shir know, right here we have a Agadic passage with some halachic language in it, and we have several options. One is to take this purely agadically and say that this is just telling us, you know, how bad things were after the Churban. Like, really, you know, oy, halavai, no one would be born into this horrible era that we live in. Right, that would sort of be the simplest, most straightforward agadic read of this, right? It was so bad, it would have been worth letting the Jews die out, because life is not worth living post-Mikdash, which is a pretty strong statement about how bad the Churban was, but it doesn't have halachic implications, and the Chasam Sofer goes in this direction, not this exact sort of simple agadic interpretation. His argument, Al Derech Drush, is that God promised that he will never allow the Jewish people to disappear. And therefore, we should have not had children, because we could have forced God's hand, therefore, to save us, right? Because if we stopped having children because we were in so much pain, right, God's promise to make sure the Jews wouldn't disappear would have forced his hand, so to speak, to save us from this misery. But we don't do it because, you know, no one's really going to listen, or at least the people who are least likely to listen are the Rishayim. And therefore, what you would have is that the Tzaddikim would try to be forcing God's hand, and they wouldn't have children. The Rishayim would have children, which would just make it that the Jews who did exist would be raised by Rishayim. But God's hand wouldn't be forced, because the Jews wouldn't be facing destruction. Just the good Jews would be facing destruction. And therefore we gave up on it. But this is, the first interpretation I suggest is pure Agadah. This is like, you know, hypothetic halacha, not halacha, but hypothetical practical advice, but impossible. So, you know, basically agadic hyperbole, a sort of pragmatic theoretical, which doesn't work, but it highlights how bad things were and how much we really needed God at that moment. Now, the next sort of level up from that is to say, you know what, this is halachic, but not quite literal. I mean, that's the approach that Tosus takes. Tosus says, well, this can't be. There's a mitzvah d'oraisa of Purvu. Right? You can't take this halachically. So instead of saying, well, it's just agadah, right, just hyperbole, which would have been the simplest pshat, instead he says, well, it must mean that it doesn't apply to people who don't have children, who haven't been mekayim puruvu. It means that if someone was already mekayim puruvu, so we would tell them not to have more children. Now, what does it mean, therefore, that the Jews would be destroyed? Obviously, there would be children, so, I don't know, it would minimize the numbers, right? Or, if you only let people have the absolute minimum, so, you know, that's barely replacement, the Jews would slowly but surely disappear, or something along those lines, right? If you don't have a replacement rate of, you know, 2.1, or whatever it is, right, the Jews will slowly disappear. He also notes that Hanach Lahem Yisrael normally means something is usser. We just don't tell the sinner so that he doesn't become a purposeful violator. Here it doesn't really mean that. It means we should have been gozer, in which case people who would have had children would have been avaryonim. Instead, we weren't gozer at all. So they're not shogegin. They're just not avaryonim, because there is no takana, which again, Tosfos could have said, well, the use of Hanach Lahem Yisrael in a way that doesn't really mean what it means anywhere else in Shas, in any halachic context, should indicate that this is not real halacha, it's just hyperbole. But instead, Tosfos says, no, it doesn't mean it literally, right? It just means we weren't gozer, because then people would have been avaryonim. We don't really mean shogeg, we don't really mean mazid, but this was a theoretical halachic option. Now again, Tosus doesn't think this is halacha l'maisa, but this is one step up from taking it as mere, so to speak, agadita. Right? He's saying it's not just telling you how bad things were, it was an actual plausible possibility such that he has to defend the halachic viability of that mechanism by saying it's only for people who already Mermakayim Puravu, but you see that he's willing to take this, not just agadically, but as a theoretical possible halachic construct, which Chazal didn't in the end institute, but was indeed possible. The most shocking position is the Mordechai in Yevama, argues, no, this is mamash halacha l'maisa. Even though it's true that we allow having children, there is a remnant to this hava amina, or this gzir that would have been. Namely, that even though we tell people to get married and have children, the Gemara in Yevamos tells us that if a couple is married and they don't have children for 10 years, so then they should get divorced. Now the Mordechai says, well, that doesn't really apply, because that would only be if the chiyuv of Puravu was in full force. But this Gemara reveals that it's not. This Gemara reveals that, in fact, there's something about the chiyuv of Puravu that was removed as part of this korban. So even if we allow people to get married, we don't impose it. Now, is this halacha l'maisa? So the Ramah does write that we don't force people nowadays to divorce their wives after 10 years, and that is the standard psak. However, the Ramah is based on the Rivash, who seems to simply think that we're not kofin, but not that there is no halacha, right? Just that we're not kofin, but it does sound like, at some level, that's the right halacha. Though the Beis Shmuel, who's one of the most important Nosei Kelim on Ibn Ezer and Shulchan Aruch, argues not like the Ramah, quoting the Rivash, but in fact quotes the Mordechai l'halacha and says, no, this is a fundamental law, that in fact nowadays there is no reason to have a couple divorce if they haven't had children, because Puravu is not in full force because of the Chorban and the tragedy that ensued, and the level to which we really shouldn't be having children, and it's really a concession to human weakness that we allow people to continue having families. Now, there are other poskim who weigh in on this, the Kovet Shurim, the Meshuv Davar, all weigh in on this in slightly different ways. Some arguing that a couple can divorce, but we don't force it. But at any rate, so just to summarize, on the methodological agadata level, right, you see that you have this agadata, which sounds quasi-halachic, has halachic phraseology, but there are serious halachic problems, both with the theory and the text, right, both that Hanach Lam Yisrael doesn't mean what it normally means, and how could it be Mivatal Puruvu. So one direction is to take it purely agadically and say, this is telling us how bad the Chorban was, and getting us to really understand that in a deep way by couching it in this pragmatic halachic language. The second level is to say, look, it's not halachic maisa in any way, but it was a real halachic possibility which we have to defend, so you understand what was actually at stake, but lamaisa, there are no implications of it. And then there's the third possibility to say no, right? Even though the Gemara doesn't accept the full version, meaning we didn't actually forbid having children, in the end of the day, there is indeed halachic implications to this. So you see, both in terms of halachic methodology, and as well in understanding how seriously we take the Chorban and how much it's shaped our experience, right? Is it just that we feel really bad, or is it radically altered, even the halachic system, because the reality we live in is so different than that of the pre-Chorban, those different models help us understand how much we lost with the Chorban Abayit, and how that has continuing implications in our own lives. So I hope that that gives you a little bit of insight both into the methodology of Agadah and some ideas about the Chorban, and get you in the mood as we approach Tisha B'Av.